5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently.
Oh, hello and welcome to another hour of Tech Talk with me, Stephen Scott. Great to have you with me and my guests this week once again. I've got Robin Christofferson from AbilityNet. Hello to you, sir.
Hi, Stephen.
And we've got Tim Schwartz joining us from lifeafterblindness.com. I have to say that way. You know, I have to do it that way.
Yes, you do.
It feels
awkward when you don't do it. It's just
exactly.
It's wrong. But I was going to say hello, first of all, to you and Robin. And you sound so chipper today, Stephen.
You know why? Because I've got the coffee machine and it is going like a fairground ride, is the only thing I can think of at this point that goes. Yeah,
well done.
I'm just adding a bit.
It hasn't kicked in yet, apparently.
A bit of sugar gun in here just now. A friend of mine who's no longer with us, sadly, and you might understand why when I tell you this. He used to have a coffee every day. He'd have at least two or three coffees that had 10 spoonfuls. Six spoonfuls of sugar. Shut
Yikes.
Up, Stephen. I haven't enough, that's the problem. Six wow. spoonfuls of coffee and oh. 10 spoonfuls of sugar. That was it.
What?
Yeah, I'm not kidding you. I used to make it for him. That's how I know it was like that.
I mean, that's only two teaspoonfuls of sugar more than a can of Coke, though, just saying.
Yeah, that's true, yeah, that's true.
That's saying something about Coke, not about...
Well, yeah. Did you know that is it McDonald's right. coffee has got six teaspoonfuls of sugar in it?
I'm not surprised.
Like, before you add sugar. Anything to it. Before you add
oh,
anything.
Blimey.
I know.
There's at least that much in the cheeseburgers, probably. So.
And you know, like bread and pasta full of sugar as well. So you can't get away from it wherever you go.
No, but I love them all so much.
I know.
But I had a friend who went to America, and she said it took 3 weeks to find bread that didn't taste like cake. Just saying.
I've never tried bread in America, if I'm honest.
Right, Tim, I don't know where they were shopping.
I know, you have sugar in your bread.
I know what he's saying. I know what the friend is saying. However...
I mean, let's be honest, there's sugar in all our bread now.
Yeah, well, there is sugar in bread, that is true.
There definitely is, but there are many, many bread alternatives. I don't know how long ago this was, but I don't eat that bread.
1941.
Oh, well, then there you go. Actually, I've gone to whole grain wraps. I hardly ever eat bread anymore. Thank you very much.
Oh, whole grain wraps. Cool. Listen to her.
Yeah.
Well, listen, good for you because, you know, I haven't.
Really.
I'm jealous. That's what it is. I realized this week that I probably shouldn't live on Mars bars. I think that's the problem. I've realized in my life, I know that I should probably have come to this conclusion before the age of 40.
With age comes wisdom.
That's very true, yeah.
Well, and it doesn't help being the parent of a 9-year-old who just Sunday went trick-or-treating. And, you know, it's my parental right not only to check her candy to make sure that it's all, you know, safe and edible and proper. And, you know, to share yes. in her candy when she's not around and not looking.
Tim, I mean, you've had this with me for every single year I've known you. This is the same
yes.
discussion we have. Every single time, you always say to me, "I've got to just make sure it's okay." At some point,
I'm just checking it for her. I'm just making sure that it's all right. I don't want her to eat anything that's going to hurt her. And for heaven's sake, she got probably 10 pounds. So I mean, she's going to need help. You know,
that's true. Yeah. Well, yeah,
if she had more health. Well, exactly. That's what I feel. It's my parental duty to do the right thing. And honestly, it's a good thing she ran out of houses because her bag ran out of space. She would have had to come home and get another bag. It was ridiculous.
Her arm dislocated. Yeah.
So
basically, yeah.
What's it like with you, Robin, at Halloween? Do the kids come round? Do you give them treats?
I don't know if it's the same in the States, but you only go to houses that have the get up outside. So the, you know, lit pumpkins, the cobwebs over the bushes and the, you know, whatever it might be, you can tell those houses and those are the ones you go to and they will have candy. They will have sweets for you. So we always just did those this year because we're sans children of any kind. We didn't put anything up and so we didn't get anyone.
We put nothing outside our house, nothing. And they still came. And I'll tell you something, anybody who knows me knows, if you can get chocolate out of me, you're doing well.
Yeah, they shouldn't come to your house. I mean, they should because that's where all the chocolate is.
Yeah,
but you're not giving it up. But no, the thing with us here in the States is there's kind of a universal understood rule that, yes, of course, if they've decorated the yard, go to their house. But also it's a either, you know, front lawn light or porch light or door light or, you know, whatever kind of light is turned on. That's to alert people, hey, we're here, we're home, and we're giving out candy. If there's no light turned on, then do not approach because that they're not interested. So, you know, but Stephen's house is the place to go to get the chocolate.
Well, you're not getting anything from me, and nobody was getting anything from me, I'll tell you that. And
fine.
Look, we're not going to discuss this anymore because, believe it or not, this is Tech
this
Talk.
This is a tech show. Yeah, this is a tech show. Rumor has it.
Let's get into this because there's a lot to talk about,
news
including
from the internet.
That's louder than I was intending it to be. Okay, so the first big story that I wanted to bring up this week is Facebook, because they've changed their name to Meta, whatever that means.
How meta of them.
Yeah, I mean, it's all nonsense, really, when you think about it. But, you know, they've brought this new name out. It doesn't mean anything, really, because none of their products are changing names. So Facebook will remain being called Facebook. I mean, this is like when Google had that parent company name. I don't know if it changed or people just became aware of it. But, you know, Google's a parent company is Alphabet.
Alphabet, yeah.
No one calls it Alphabet. They call it Google. So
Google's one subsidiary, isn't it, though?
Yeah.
They have other, like, the autonomous driving vehicle.
That's
know,
right, yeah. It's
stuff.
All under. But in terms of the individual product, you would think of it as Google. And it's the same with Facebook. They are, I think we're starting to see the apps be updated to now reflect the new name. But that's kind of about it. But really, that's not the story. That's not the story that's interesting me. It's this idea of a virtual reality world that they are proposing. And I see a lot of people on Twitter, especially blind people, saying, here we go again, something else that's not going to suit us, that's not going to be available to us. So
we don't fully know that, do we?
We don't. No, we don't. We don't know that. But we do know it's a very visual thing, right? VR is its nature. Very visual.
I can tell you, though, whether I shouldn't or not, I don't know, but they are definitely doing a lot of market research about how to make that inclusive. I can tell you that for a
fact. That's good. No, that is good. And I'm pleased to hear that. And to be fair, you know, look, we have to be realistic here. Virtual reality comes, for me, in two flavors. It comes visual and it comes audio. And, you know, the audio part is the bit we're most interested in. And as long as they get that right, I mean, look at spatial audio and the AirPods and, you know, the best example I've seen of this recently, although maybe not the best implementation of it, but certainly the best example is Clubhouse with spatial audio, which works really nicely. You know, the way the voices move around, I quite like that. It's a bit disorientating to some degree, and there's no real order to it, but, you know, I guess that's par for the course. But, you know,
different than being at a party where people are sitting around you, they get up, they walk around, they maybe go sit in a different seat. So, I mean,
that's the inclusive
part, though.
That's the way it becomes inclusive. If we can wear this headset, or actually for us, if you didn't even need to wear the headset and just wear a pair of headphones, that would be even better, right? I mean, who needs it? Well, I was sitting with this ridiculous thing on my head I can't see anything on. I mean, I've got the Oculus Quest, which I bought in a moment of madness. I think I was going through one of my many midlife crises. And at least that's, you know, the excuse I keep using when I buy new technology, of which I will tell you about my latest purchase recently. You've not to laugh. Okay, you've not to laugh.
MidlifeCrisisKeyboards.com.
It's not a keyboard this time, but it does have a keyboard.
Of course.
Okay, we'll get to that in a minute. But I'm intrigued by what they do with this, what they call the metaverse. It sounds a little bit... Do you remember that product Second Life? Which I used to read about. I mean, it was never really seen as anything good. Second Life
still
was
around.
Yeah, still going. And it is essentially a second world, isn't it? Where, you know, virtual world, where people live and they...
Many worlds, yes.
Well, I mean,
businesses.
I saw a film about it one night. It was a documentary on TV. And it began with this guy who was, you know, putting his kids to bed, and he kisses his wife, and he says, you know, I'll see you later on. And he closes the bedroom door and heads off into another room. And this is where he goes into Second Life. And in this life, the Second Life, he has a family. And he has friends. And he has, you know, he spends real money on products and has bought a house and a car. And it's like, what? You know, and this just seemed a little bit... I mean, I'm not suggesting that's what Facebook are promoting, but it does kind of head that way. That it does become maybe a second world. And for some people, maybe a primary world. You know, a lot of lonely people out there who, you know, desperately require friendship and need friendship and should have friendship. But is this the best way to do it? I mean, look at social media right now. I mean, if you want to be annoyed, go on Twitter. That's the way it is these days. You know, if you're fed up, if you're having a happy day, if you're thinking to yourself, I'm having a really good day, how can I spoil it? Go on Twitter, because that's how you can do it. You just read tweets from people who are angry about everything all the time. And of course, it's an endless echo chamber. And we're just going to create more of that with this. So I don't see the positives. I mean, I've not really seen many positives in Facebook anyway. Except for the very first day when I found a few old friends from school and then realised why I didn't, you know, stay friends with them.
There are so many books and films about where, you know, the sort of The Matrix or the Oasis, was it Ready Player One?
Ready Player One and the Oasis, yep.
Yeah, where they're kind of more compelling than the real world, maybe because the real world has had a nuclear war or something. But anyway, and I mean, we spend a lot of time talking to each other online. You know, we're not anywhere near each other. So, you know, it's all on a continuum, on a spectrum, really. So the more compelling it will be with visuals and maybe even haptic feedback as well, multi-sensory. You know, if you can actually live the life that you want to, I can see why it might be really compelling. But when does he sleep?
Well, that was my question. Yeah, I wondered that as well. Because if this guy's holding down a full-time job, which it sounded like he was, how is he sleeping
in that?
I mean, yeah, that seems not good at all. Yeah, I don't know. We'll see how we go with this. Just on a separate note, and we can get into the, because this is a huge discussion, but I think let's see the product first. We've seen examples of it at the moment, which is very basic. You know, it's exactly as you're saying, Tim. It's, you know, avatars around a table, essentially. And that's kind of what it is. You know, it's just, you know, there's avatar one who's friend number one and friend number two, and you're all, you know, in your various spaces. And we're seeing more and more of that develop into what they call immersive experiences, even through Zoom, even through Teams. Yeah. So, you know,
we've seen that with VR in general, where it's gone, especially with the faster broadband speeds and 5G and all that, where, you know, doctors are at the beginnings of performing surgeries on the other side of the world. You know, they can go to a virtual environment and manipulate a robotic hand or what have you to do surgeries. That stuff is happening or beginning to happen. And Robin's right. Something like, Ready Player One comes to mind. I love that book. I've read it probably 6 or 7 times, seen the movie countless times. And yeah, it's in a dystopian future, but people escape to that virtual environment. I think there can be pros. There can definitely obviously be cons. But what I would say is accessibility is possible. To kind of put the, you know, the button on the end of this, even Second Life had a plugin that would make it accessible for the blind. Your avatar would actually have a cane or even a dog, I think, but you could actually, and then it would, it basically with that plugin would alert you of your surroundings and people around you and buildings, and just like you were walking through a real environment with a cane. So it was
you could
more,
be a 10-story high Godzilla with a cane. That would be good.
That would be fantastic. but it was less about the cane and more about just the plugin to allow your avatar to navigate the space, the virtual space. So hopefully Facebook does something like that, and we will see. I know they do have blind employees that work at Facebook that give input and test things. So I don't know. We'll see.
You know, in America, you've got those white canes. I don't know what they call them, but they seem to be almost... I remember being at the National Federation of the Blind convention a few years back, and you know, all these people had those canes, really, really tall. And I just thought to myself, you know, that could be really useful for Godzilla. You know, if they wanted to bring in a,
well,
a blind person.
You mentioned the right part of the blind community in the U.S. because, yes, it is typically NFP people who have the longer canes, at least to my understanding. I cannot confirm nor deny and will not say anymore. But I've always been told, I believe it's measure it to your sternum. Unless you're going to do a side swipe, then measure a little bit more. But typically, I've always been told measure it to about your sternum.
That's exactly what I was told as well. Mine's is 135 centimeter? Inches? I don't know. I can't remember. I don't know.
Inches? Wow.
Whatever the right one is. Yeah. But yeah, you know, anyway, aside all that, what were we talking about? Yes, Metaverse and the wonderful world that is going to be our new second home.
I want a virtual guide dog. That's what I want.
I want a virtual guide dog. Yeah, a virtual guide dog is pretty cool. That would be pretty cool. Right, look, we've got a fantastic feature coming up from the Technology for Life team talking about the app called Ferrite. It is an audio recording app and editing app for iPhones and iPads. Chris is joining us from the TFL team a bit later with that. Shall we get some emails, though, guys? Shall we do some emails?
Let's
do it.
Email. We get email. We get
get your email every day.
Every day.
Ding dong.
Here's your mail today.
Bing bong, bing bong, bing bong, bing bong. You love that, wouldn't you? You love polka music. I bet you love polka music.
I do not.
Too.
I do not.
I think you do. I believe.
Just because I am from Cincinnati, where we have the largest Oktoberfest outside of Germany, doesn't mean that I like polka music. I like the German food.
I like the German food as well. You'll always find me at a German food market. Easily. Any food market, in fairness.
Okay, really? Just
not
a German
exclusive.
German?
Other countries are available. Right, let's get our first email. This one comes from Kelly.
Hi, gang. I went to Exeter on holiday and walked into the Apple store to buy an AirTag for my suitcase as I am fed up with not knowing where it is while traveling by train using the passenger assist. Had a bit of trouble at first, but a very nice gentleman from the Apple store helped me set it up. I had a choice. Should I have it set up so that VoiceOver can tell me how many feet my luggage is, which will drive me mad, or should I have it set to sound? I decided to have my AirTag on to sound and use Siri to pinpoint my luggage. I can tell you that this is fantastic. I tried it in my hotel room with my dad, who came on holiday with me. I went into the bathroom so that he could move my suitcase, and then asked Siri to find my luggage. Then there it was. The amount of times I have been given the wrong suitcases by the guard and station staff, I don't have to worry anymore. I use it in front of them, and no way can I be given the wrong suitcase. I urge every single blind person to have one of these. It is just so simple. Well done, Apple, and well done, Tech Talk. Can't be without it. It is now gadget number 6 of my top 5 gadgets I talked to you about 2 years ago at the end of this month. Can't wait to go down memory lane. Yes, it is tech from the past. Before I go, how many of you had the game of Simon? I did, and loved it. I still play it now. Take care. Kelly.
Simon, yeah, I remember that game.
We have it.
Yeah, you still got it, have you?
I have a couple of apps on my phone that are Simon or Simon-like, and then I think a couple of years ago, for Christmas, we got Simon for Alyssa for a birth, or yeah, for birthday or Christmas, I don't remember now, and she loves it because it's got so many new functions and different things, kind of like the Bop It games, where they've added so many things to Bop It, Pull It, you know, Bash It, Smash It, I don't know, but throw it. But yeah, I mean, Simon is fantastic.
Okay, cool. Yeah, well, actually, on that point about tech from the past, which Kelly is keen for us all to talk about, Gail got in touch.
Hello, all. The past tech I used to love was the Parrot Personal Organizer from Cobalt Systems. It was a memo pad, diary, and phone book. You would enter the telephone numbers in this device and it was voice activated, so you could just say the name of the person to contact and this would throw up the telephone number and also dial it for you. I thought it was fantastic. I think I bought mine in 1996, well before the iPhone was even thought of. Kind regards. Gail.
Thanks, Gail. Yeah, I haven't heard of that one. That's a new one on me, but that sounds brilliant. Love that.
Yeah,
that's nice. I wish I had that in 1996.
Yeah, so many good. I mean, the courier, the book courier was the one for me. Loved that device.
Oh, I remember that, yes.
Oh, yeah. Had a terrible TTS, but it was such a brilliant device.
Well, they all had terrible TTS, let's be honest. But in saying that, it's a bit like watching an old movie. You know, in some ways it was much clearer. And, you know, like old movies you watch nowadays, it's like you can, they speak about 100 miles an hour, but you can understand every word perfectly. Whereas now, everyone just whispers all the time.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, stop that. Speak properly.
Dramatic effect. Yeah.
Yeah. Just talk properly. I can't hear you. But yeah, that was the thing with TTS then. It was built to be as clear as possible, despite the challenges. But yeah, I mean, this all started, I think, because I brought up this. What was my Franklin Language Master, which, yeah. You know, way back, which I used at school. I mean, back in the, well, early 90s. And I loved it. I still got it to this day. Still works. Still does the job. But, of course, the thing is, all these things are you know, consumed by apps or by smart speakers. I can now just ask Lady A, you know, to define a word or spell a word or whatever. And that's the key, right? I mean, my biggest issue was when I was growing up, I always used to remember asking the teachers and annoy them with it by asking the teacher – how do you, you know, try to look up a word, like, how do you spell it? And they'd be like, oh, you know, because if I can't spell it, how do I find it? That was going to be the challenge.
Now, the Franklin had a thesaurus in as well, I think.
It did, yeah, that's right.
So a top tip on the A-Lady, there's a skill called My Thesaurus, because if you just ask her for, you know, give me a synonym for whatever, she'll give you two or three. But if you open My Thesaurus or just say, A-Lady, ask My Thesaurus for a synonym for excited, she'll give you 18.
So, it's my favourite of all the dinosaurs.
Yeah. Yeah, apart from Jafinkisaurus.
Hey, that's a blind one. Okay, fine. Right, moving on. We'll get emails. Okay, let's get another email though. This comes from Chris.
Hi, lads. Sorry, but I have an Android query. When previously using a Samsung Galaxy S10e on Android version 10, I had no problems regarding using TalkBack and Google Assistant. As soon as I upgraded to Android version 11, there was a conflict as the TalkBack would start talking when Google Assistant was initiated, rendering it almost unusable. I am now using a Sony Xperia 5.2, and despite initially not encountering this problem, I am now finding the same issue occurring intermittently. The only difference now from using the Samsung is that if I reboot the phone, the conflict goes away but will return sporadically. I have had multiple interactions with both Samsung and Google, but up to now have still not had the issue resolved. As we are on the verge of Android 12 being released, I would have expected an update to have been released long before now to fix this problem. I was wondering if you have had anybody else contact you with the same issue, and if you can offer any help regarding this matter. Kind regards, Chris.
Thank you, Chris. I've got to say, no one's contacted us regarding this issue, but I can tell you two things. One, I've always found Android to be a lot more verbose than VoiceOver, and VoiceOver's very verbose, and it's actually sometimes has really bad points. And bad moments in time when it's just become awful. I mean, one thing that used to drive me insane about Android was whenever you'd make a call and you'd hold the phone up to your ear, it would start reading out if it was just the phone number you typed in or any of the information, or sometimes the whole screen would just get read to you and you couldn't seem to shut the thing up. You'd do the two-finger tap on it to silence it, but it just sometimes wouldn't action it. Well, VoiceOver seems to do the same now, so it's not unique to Android. But that is an interesting update. I mean, like you say, Android 12 is now rolling out to a lot of devices. Not all of them, obviously, at once. But I'll be intrigued to hear if anyone else has had that problem. I think verbosity over these assistants can be a challenge because essentially it's trying to read the screen for you, but you kind of want it to shut up so you can talk to the assistant.
I mean, I was going to say welcome to the club.
Yeah.
Because VoiceOver talks over the S-Lady all the time.
That's right.
You know, I invoke it with the home button or whatever, and it's the first time is always pretty much spoken over, so then I have to do it again. So, yeah, I would be inclined to do the three-finger double tap to mute speech if I know I want to get it right the first time.
That's true. Yeah, that's another way of doing it. But that gets a bit annoying, doesn't it? You've got to do that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you're right. Welcome to the club on that one, I'm afraid. It is a bit of a problem. It seems to be across the board. Okay, let's get another email. This one from Catherine, and it follows up on the conversations we've been having around feature phones and using devices that are perhaps, we would certainly class as specialist. Like we had the interview recently with the team at VoxMate. We've talked about Synaptic in the past. Well, here's where Catherine is at the moment.
Hi, Tech Talkers. At present, I use Synaptic software for most of my needs like emails, text, Be My Eyes and so on. But when I go into the web browser, I find it too hard to see and fiddly. Although there is speech, I just can't get along with it even when I use the up and down volume keys to browse through. Do you know if there is any help I can get that will teach me how to use the web browser properly? It would be a dream if I could do my food shopping independently along with other things like filling in forms. It really isn't fair the way everybody is expected to fill in forms online. What I would really like to do is be able to use an iPhone, as I have seen some of my other friends that are blind and seem to get along with it fine, and I must admit I am jealous of the independence they have. Many thanks and keep up the good work. Catherine from Buxton.
Catherine, First off, thank you so much for sending in that email, because I think you are certainly not alone in this. There are a lot of people out there who will have products like Synaptic or VoxMate, or even just have stock Android and or a voice an iPhone with VoiceOver on, just wondering how to navigate all this stuff. And I'm really glad that you brought this up, because it is a challenge. And I think this is one of the points I keep making about these specialist types of devices. And people love to slam me for this, and they love to say, oh, he's against them. It's not that I'm against them. It's just, like I said to the guy at VoxMate, you know, is it the case that we're teaching people the wrong skills when you're using, you know, learning to use these apps? Because you're learning to use a system, but you're not learning to use the basic system that's underneath it. You're learning to use this walled garden. And the problem is, not everything is in that walled garden. So as soon as you have to leave it, and in this case you would have to, if you're either going to a web browser, or I would recommend probably an app to do the food shopping, you know, you're going to struggle with that. So yeah, come on, guys, jump in on this. I'm intrigued.
I mean, age, I think, is a big factor, because, you know, skills that you can learn from, you know, mainstream skills, I think if you're new to technology and you're relatively young, you've got the whole of your life ahead of you, the more sort of seamlessly you can go into mainstream at some point, the better. If you're old and an iPhone is beyond you, or a, you know, a smartphone of any kind, without using something like VoxMate, which is absolutely brilliant, and, you know, is only going to get more and more powerful, but certainly does a lot of core things that you'd want at the moment, you know, then there's not going to be any other skills.
It's a parallel system. It's more than a launcher, though, because you're actually activating apps. You're using apps within that walled garden. So it's more than a launcher. It's easy to write it off as a launcher and say, well, this is great because it gets you the access. And I'm not denying it's a great product. It is a great product. Mm-hmm. But I just think, is it wrong to teach people something which means that you still have to learn how to use VoiceOver on the iPhone, Android, TalkBack? You're still going to have to learn to use those. I mean, this is the bit I don't understand. People love to talk about these apps, and I think it's great. That's brilliant. But all you can do is what's in that walled garden, because otherwise you still need the knowledge to do the very thing that is making you not use the software, right? So I mean, if you're using VoxMate or you're using Synaptic, you're using it because you think it's an easier experience. But if you still have to go and learn how TalkBack or VoiceOver works, well, why not you just learn how VoiceOver or TalkBack works, and then, you know, you don't know
the actual device they're designed for. Yeah.
With VoxMate, you don't have to have TalkBack running. You can, in which case it's only got four gestures, VoxMate: up, down, single finger swipe, up, down, left and right, and that's it. You can have VoiceOver, TalkBack running, in which case those turn into double finger swipes, but you don't have to. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's horses for courses, really, and the more people that can be shown the options hands-on...
Yeah, but hang on. No, but this is the point you're missing with Catherine's email there. What Catherine's saying is, you know, for me, I love using Synaptic. She loves using Synaptic, and she's obviously using it, and she's enjoying it, and absolutely, that's great. That's not the problem. The problem is when she has to go outside of the walled garden.
Yeah, which is what... I wasn't answering that question. I was talking about whether there is a place for these apps. But no, you're absolutely right. I've got a colleague, fantastically tech literate. He's blind as well. And he heavily relies on Aira. And I know people are going to say, well, you know, that costs real money. Definitely don't underestimate the power of the free 5 minutes. That can take you an awfully long way. But he gets every last penny of value out of that subscription in getting those guys to jump onto his computer with TeamViewer, very quick process, and doing those thorny forms for him. Mm. Doing all of those things every time he's bumping up inaccessibility, and he has to get that thing done. So I know it's a workaround, but it's massively powerful, and he sees it as being brilliant value for money. So yeah, you know, maybe that would be what people would have to do if you have to kind of step out for one thing. Or three things a week, or whatever it might be.
And just to bring up the point, and Tim, I'll let you come in on this, but the one thing I would suggest is, as well, maybe try the app relevant to the store. So if you're talking about doing online shopping in a particular supermarket, for example, Catherine, you might be better to try and get the app downloaded for that store rather than try and navigate it on the web, which I think would certainly be more challenging. And you know, the thing is, I will say this, the difference perhaps between Voxmate and Synaptix, from my own experience, is that Synaptix is probably closer to the real experience of using TalkBack, you know, because it's the same approach. It swipes and double taps. I think you can set it for single taps as well, actually, if you want. But, you know, you do the swipes to get through the various apps that are built in, and that's great, you know, and you still have the similar experience. So in some ways, you're learning the right tools with that app. Voxmate is teaching you a slightly different way of doing things, which, you know, again, it's horses for courses, as you say, Robin. Some people might love that. And I see a lot of people in the blind community raving about this and saying it's brilliant. And that's great. But for me, it's just, the problem is it doesn't, you know, what happens when I want to get onto my bank? What happens when I want to, you know, I'd love to use an app. This is my argument about this kind of thing. I actually love the experience of it. The problem is the things I want to do don't live inside that world. So I'm always coming out of that world, which means I still need the same skills as any other blind person who uses an iPhone or Android. And that's my issue with it. And I don't know how you get around that, because do you really want to create a parallel world just for blind people? Is that what we want?
I don't think so. I mean, we've had that in the past because that's what has been needed, or maybe I don't want to say needed. That's what we've had to have provided because mainstream hadn't caught up yet. And we're to a point where mainstream has not only been catching up, but boy, has it caught up. And in some cases, not all, unfortunately, but in a lot of cases, is gone above and beyond. And so, yeah, if you're dipping your toe in the waters, or talking about the walled garden metaphor, if you're wandering around that walled garden and realize, wow, there's things on the other side of that metaphoric wall that I'd like to do with this device, but it's not as easy as I hoped, or I have to go outside of the parameters of what I'm using this device for, then yeah, that's when you want to look at something else that's quote unquote more of a smart device, and go to TalkBack or VoiceOver. And I agree with a little bit of everything here, because yeah, if you're already using swipe type gestures with these devices, it's only a couple steps further to learn a few more of those gestures to really start diving into an Apple phone or an Android based phone. And so if you've begun that process, why not go a little bit further, test it out, see what happens. And I do agree with the idea of, you know, if I'm stuck inside this world, this walled garden, as you said, Stephen, you know, it kind of reminds me of back when I had like a Nokia phone or anything pre App Store on smartphone devices, where you'd have built in email, built in text, built in a couple of other apps or whatever. But then you have to go to a website and find hopefully find an app on a website and download the third party app and hope that it was going to install and hope that it was going to work. And then it wouldn't work with Talks or, you know, whatever it was you were using, you know, on that phone. And so we're thankfully way beyond that. We don't need to have that kind of worry and that kind of barrier anymore. And thankfully we have quote unquote specialist tech that can give people a very specific use. And if they're only wanting to have that use case and they don't need to step outside that walled garden, great. They've got a wonderful device or several options of devices to do that. But there is something to be said for taking a few extra steps, because something you said, you know, a moment ago about using the app pertaining to the retailer or the store, you know, it used to be going to the website was probably better. Nowadays, not always, certain, you know, places come to mind, but we won't go there. But mostly retail stores that I go to, they're so nice. They're so accessible. Their apps, that is. They're so much easier than using the website because they're consolidated, because they're trimmed down and made for a very specific experience. And so in a way, it's easier to navigate because there's less garbage on the screen than what you would get on a website to navigate. So it actually ends up being much easier, in my opinion, to use the app versus a website. And I would prefer to use an app every time, if as long as it's accessible, and most of the time it is.
Now, to the point that Catherine also brings up about access to resources, how do you get help with this? My first port of call for you, Catherine, would be RNIB's Technology for Life team.
Yep.
For a couple of different reasons. Yeah, but for a couple of reasons. One, because they have on over-the-phone support. We used to have, and we do have technology volunteers who will come out and actually spend time with you. And of course, that had to be scaled back because of the pandemic, but that service is now restarting. So we could hopefully maybe get a volunteer out to you who could actually talk you through the process of learning. And they are skilled in a wide range of areas, and you know, they are not biased in any way towards any one thing or the other. I know there's always a suggestion of Apple bias in blind teaching, and I think that's unfortunate because it's not really true. The volunteers do not have a bias towards that, so you could very much get some support teaching you how to use TalkBack in order to navigate these apps and, you know, do your shopping independently. I really don't think we're at a stage now, if you're comfortable with an Android phone, I don't think there would be a reason to switch to an iPhone that would benefit you.
No.
I think you should Braille. Stay with Android. Well, we don't know Catherine's situation, whether she's using Braille or not. But, you know, it sounds to me like she's using the screen. She's using Synaptic. She wants to use the phone more. I think, you know, if you've got used to that phone and you've obviously spent money on it, you know, you can use it. And, you know, maybe down the line you might want to make the switch. But right now that might be too much of a jump, to be honest. I think if you're comfortable with the Android phone, stick with it. But get some training. And, you know, call the RNIB helpline. The number is 0303 123 9999. I know that you'll be diving for something to record that on, so I'll say it again at the end. And you can email them as well. TFL, short for Technology for Life, @rnib.org.uk. Worth mentioning those resources so that you can contact and hopefully get some support and solve that problem, Catherine.
Absolutely. And if I may say so, Stephen, in addition to that, a lot of times, you know, like the question we had before, we may not here at Tech Talk always have an answer about a bug or a very specific issue someone's having. But if someone's got a new iPhone or new Android, they're like, I don't know how to do this and I can't find what's the gesture for this or how do I access this or how do I turn this on or off? I presume the listeners know this, but as a reminder, email us and we will get you the answer if we can.
Yeah.
You know, if it's just something simple as how do I turn this on? How do I turn this off? What's the gesture for this or that? Like I said, we can answer those questions if it's something like that. So feel free to email us as well.
We do have more emails. We'll get to those in a moment. But I thought we should take a break because let's bring in Chris here from the Technology for Life team, talking of the wonderful guys there. Let's bring in Chris, who's going to tell us all about an app called Ferrite, which if you're interested in audio editing using your iPhone or your iPad, well, this may be one to settle in and enjoy.
Hello, it's Chris from the Tech for Life team, and I'm going to talk to you today about another recording app for the iPhone, well, iOS and iPad. I know we tend to focus a lot on iOS as severely sight-impaired people, blind people. A lot of us are using iOS rather than Android still, although there are big improvements in Android. However, it's not just for us that a lot of these multimedia apps tend to be found on iOS rather than Android. It seems because Apple have control over the hardware, the whole stack, hardware, software, you do tend to find a lot of these media apps firstly available on iOS. There's certainly much more choice for that kind of thing, whether you're sighted or visually impaired. The app I'm going to talk about is called Ferrite Recording Studio. Ferrite is spelled F-E-R-R-I-T-E, and it's by Wooji Juice. Wooji Juice, the developer, is spelled W-O-O-J-I, second word, Juice, J-U-I-C-E. And basically what it is a multi-track audio editor and recorder. Now, I want to stress here at the beginning, it's multi-track for editing, but you would not call this a multi-track recorder. This is not something where you can, you know, like comparable to a mixing desk or other DAW, digital audio workstation software that you might find on PCs where you can record separate tracks alongside each other. This is more of a system where you can record and then line up these audio elements, or clips as they are known, on separate tracks. I hope that sort of makes sense, but so you can line up different audio clips on separate tracks, have separate effects and so on, but you can't record multiple tracks at the same time. The free version limits you to 3 tracks and up to an hour recording. Now, the full version, which I'm lucky to have, is it's £28, or it was when I got it. Which sounds quite a lot for an app, but if you're going to get into this sort of mobile recording and editing, you know, it's I would say it's worth it. And that's what the app is aimed at: mobile recording, perhaps interviews, preparing podcast material, field recording. The idea being that you can do all the main editing, pre-production, I suppose, well, even full production, actually, on the device itself. You can add bookmarks and things like that through the audio file, which can be converted to chapter marks when it comes to uploading podcasts. The developer has very much gone out of their way to make this as accessible as possible. In fact, there's a whole chapter in the manual, which is quite comprehensive, but there's a whole chapter in there for using it with VoiceOver. And for those of you that like to use a Bluetooth keyboard, there are lots of keyboard shortcuts as well. Obviously, I don't have time to go through all the features of the app, so this is really just to give you an overview, the layout, and, you know, so you can hear what it sounds like with VoiceOver. Hopefully you can hear this being picked up, but the main screen is your sort of library view. Typical of this type of application, you have you create everything in what's called a project, and that includes the audio, the effects, the track settings, all encompassed within a sort of project file. Audio, as I say, is dealt with as clips. So just swiping around, flicking around on the main screen here.
Edit button. Select button. Library button. Tools. Sort by. Search. Ready to record. Stereo. Left channel. Right channel. Record button.
So right from the front screen here is where you can record new items, new clips, either using the built-in microphone or an external one.
Adjustable. Record button. Monitoring off. Dimmed. Adjustable.
I have monitoring turned off because I'm not using headphones, so otherwise you would get feedback. Obviously, normally I would use headphones because when I hit record now, it's also going to pick up VoiceOver. But let's try that.
Record button. Record.
This is a test using Ferrite Recording Studio.
Right channel, on, stop, button, stop, fill,
image. I actually used my single finger action there to double tap on the stop button. Reason being, if you use the magic two finger double tap, that doesn't always work. In fact, when I did that earlier, it started playing the audiobook I was listening to. That's just something to be aware of, so you may be better off finding that button and double tapping it. So we're still on the front screen, the library screen. The new recording I've just added at the top. Well, the new recording I've just done is at the top of the screen. At the top of the list, rather.
Selected. New recording. 5, 7 seconds. Today. 11, 5.
By flicking up. Yep, actions available.
Delete. Share. Info. Edit. Activate. Delete. Activate. Default.
Activate will obviously play it.
Record.
This is a test using Ferrite Recording Studio.
Right channel, on, stop, button.
If I flick up and double tap on edit, that will take us to the project main screen, the editing screen actually, where you can import more clips and have separate tracks and add effects to each of those, and where the editing is done. I do have a better recording of VoiceOver just stepping through that screen, which I'll add on shortly. As I say, this is really just a very quick overview of this app, but you have some very useful features like things like auto-ducking, which you would use, for example, if you're doing a voiceover, some music, some bedding, and you need the music to duck down as you're speaking, it will do that automatically. The sort of thing we've all heard was DJs introduce records. You can, of course, from the editing screen, once you've compiled or finished with your project, you can export it, and it will export it to a WAV file or several other formats, and then you can use that, well, wherever you want, really. Import it into an app like Anchor, where you can set it up and use it as a podcast, add it to Dropbox, iCloud Drive, the usual sort of thing. Before I end and just play out with VoiceOver navigating this editing screen so you can hear what's in there, I just want to sort of make clear, whilst I use this app for recording, I tend not to do editing on it. Although it is accessible, it is quite slow and tedious using VoiceOver. that's just the nature of it, I suppose. But it has this sort of tape analogy. So you make cuts to the audio, cut things out, join them together. If you can imagine a long piece of tape and you want to remove something in the middle, you can do that, but then you need to move the two items back together so there's not a gap. That kind of thing was fairly typical of audio editing, but I just find that sort of task a lot easier on a PC using something like Goldwave or Reaper, Audacity. There are lots of editors for audio on a PC that are pretty accessible now. So you're now just going to hear what the editing screen, the main area of Ferrite, sounds like using VoiceOver.
New recording, edit, project, 8 seconds, today, 22:41, delete, share, info, edit, showing from 0 seconds to 9 seconds, 410 milliseconds, playhead at 0 seconds, track 1 tools, volume, panning, track 1, edit, new recording, final mix, add new track, import, toolbar, undo, redo, rewind, play, fast forward, fast for play, rewind, redo, undo, done, import, add new, final, new, track 1, panning, volume, track 1 tools, track tools, heading, mute slash solo settings, ducking settings, effects, automation, show automation tracks, select all on track, all tracks, ducking settings, rearrange tracks, delete track.
So, as I say, a very quick overview of this powerful app. As for the price, £28 or thereabouts, I think if you're going to be doing a lot of mobile recording, arranging tracks, that kind of thing, I'd say it's well worth it. This is, until fairly recently, something you would only find on desktops. Or even the free version you may find suits what you want to do, so give it a go. And that's Ferrite Recording Studio. Available on iOS and iPad OS.
Thank you, Chris. Well, there you go. And a really in-depth look at that app. The sad thing, I guess, out of all that was that editing is slow and that he still goes back to the desktop. But I'm like, no, I don't want to go back to the desktop.
It is, but you have to consider that you're doing that a swipe and tap or double tap at a time. I have used Ferrite myself and I love it. And I use it with a Bluetooth keyboard. And it has, if you spend the money to buy the full version, you get not just all the access to the keyboard shortcuts, but you can actually, you know, change them, of course, as you expect to be whatever you want them to be. So once you have all those keyboard shortcuts, which are pretty typical, you know, Mac-type keyboard shortcuts, it works just like all those other programs that he was talking about, you know, Goldwave or Audacity, and you can do all those things. But yeah, I think if you're just looking to record, you don't really care about recording more than one track at once, you only, you know, need three layers of tracks, you know, the free is fine. But a lot of those other things that Chris was sharing with, like sound effects and the audio or the auto ducking and, you know, all the other things, those are the things that you're going to get with the pay version. And like he said, even if you're going to do all those things and are going to edit, it's worth it. But again, I just say use a Bluetooth keyboard and it's fantastic.
Okay, well, I shall listen with interest to hear how you guys get on with that. Okay, let's get back to the emails because we have got a lot more to get through. And let's get an email from Ricky.
Hi, regarding today's tech talk. Touchscreens suck and I don't see myself ever using the voice dictation features, but then you never know, as I still prefer typing. But for now I'm perfectly happy with my phones. One is the Easy Flip 3G 4G from Olitech in Australia, which is a good old feature phone, only SMS and calls, though most users seem partially sighted by the way questions are answered, but is nevertheless fully accessible to be one like me. The other is the first Blind Shell Classic, the second has just come out, also a button phone. Some might call this one a glorified feature phone or smartphone wannabe, but I'm happy with them both. I don't want social media and all that. I hope these two phones will allow me to make them last for years, as I'm still of the semi-old school that keeps such devices for years till they don't work. I suppose I'll eventually set up Telegram on the Blind Shell Classic or get the new one with WhatsApp or the like, but what really attracted me to it was the built-in internet radio.
so I can listen to shows like yours and not worry about using the net on my desktop, as I use the desktop for other things, and as far as I know, we don't have what I call physical internet radios in South Africa yet, and maybe Blindshell, both, will get a podcast player soon too. Ricky Lomi.
Thanks, Ricky. Interesting view there on feature phones. This is all kind of going the same direction this week, you notice. We're kind of heading through this, obviously picking up on the conversation we had around VoxMaid and Synaptic and all the rest. And those are obviously for smartphones. But feature phones, they are in a world of their own. And I do like these phones, I must say. I do hanker back to the days of, you know, my original phones. When I go back to the original Nokias, even my BlackBerry, which didn't have a screen reader, although I think it did attempt to have a screen reader for a while, but that fell apart very quickly. But you know, those kind of essentially those devices with keyboards, as well as, you know, the touchscreen or whatever, or even no touchscreen. The feature phones are very popular, it seems, and the Blindshell Classic, the new version, sounds pretty cool. Again, they're all walled gardens. You know, but if that's what you want, then again, it's like we say, that's the choice.
I'd want to put a shout out for smart speakers as well, particularly when it comes to internet radio. They are really cost effective. And if you're in a country, not sure about South Africa, but I certainly know a friend in New Zealand. Amazon hasn't reached New Zealand, but you just set it to another region. So, you know, you get yourself an Echo. Somehow, you know, usually from, I don't know, mail order of some kind, you know, to get it to your country. And then you just set it up with, as if it's in the US, for example. And then you can get all the internet radio stations you like using something like MyTuner Radio, that skill. And you can also then use it for, you know, a range of other things that, including, we should talk here in the UK, we should briefly mention about how the RNIB are giving away Echoes as their kind of new gen talking book machines.
Well, no, hang on, not quite. They are giving away some Amazon Echoes up until the 14th of November, I think it is. There's a few available, so let's not get people too carried away here. There are some available.
I'm really surprised that they're not kind of leaning into that, because they're certainly cheaper than talking book machines for them to provide.
I mean, absolutely, yeah. And today that is very much the choice. Although in saying that, and I think it's important to say this as well, those who can afford one and can buy one, you know, and they are significantly, you know, less cost than a talking book machine. So, you know, there's that. But for those who can't afford one, who may need access to one or would need access to one, then yeah, but, you know, give the RNIB a call on that helpline number I was telling you earlier about, you know, and ask about this. But I believe it's only up until November 14th, and it is pretty much a until they are gone type thing. So, yeah, just be aware of that. Let's get an email just to balance things up a bit, because, you know, if we're going to trash everything this episode, we may as well trash Apple as well. Jennifer's got in touch.
Hello, chaps. I have a problem.
Well, don't we all? In that July this year, when I changed phone tariff, I lost my ability to ask Siri if I had any voicemail to read to me. The O2 disability section sorted this out. It happened again the weekend of the 24th September. Despite my husband Freddie and I spending around 15 hours on the phones with both O2 and Apple, nobody, including their gurus, can work it out. I have heard today from a staff member at London Vision that Apple has withdrawn the command facility for both voicemail and email. Have you heard anything about this, and if so, what can we do to get it back? I am not brilliant at picking up my messages by swiping. Very frustrating. By the way, I have been an avid listener for several years and am found tucked up in my pit laughing my head off to the shenanigans. I have an iPhone SE 2020. Best wishes, Jennifer Carpenter.
Thanks, Jennifer. Yeah, unfortunately, you've heard right. Siri has lost a number of commands, which is just utterly bemusing to me. Why that has happened, I don't get it. Why would you
it
take
might be
things
to do
away?
With this on-device move in 15 to do a lot of processing on-device, but I think I've heard rumours that they are gradually reintroducing them in this kind of new way where on-device is the kind of primary thing. But yeah, I don't know.
Well, is it because of that? Is it because they're taking away things that they don't know if are working yet and then reinstating them when they do?
I believe it's to do with this kind of switch to primarily processing things on device. So, yeah, I don't know.
Mm. Okay, well, we'll watch with interest on that one, because that is ridiculous. I mean, Siri is the worst smart assistant on Earth. You know, and please, Apple, don't make it worse by taking all its functions away, the ones that we actually do like. Just saying. Right, let's get another email in from Gordon.
Hi, Tech Talkers. I do not watch a great deal of TV, but I have been very disappointed by Channel 4's inability to provide audio description for some weeks now. I absolutely agree with Stephen that a program without AD simply is not worth watching. Most of my TV viewing is confined to films, again as long as they have audio description, but Channel 4 do often show documentaries which have AD, and I do, or did, enjoy watching these. I was glad that RNIB and other organizations were making representations to Channel 4, but I was so angered by the time it is taking to reinstate AD that I contacted my MP. She wrote to Channel 4 expressing concerns and did receive a response full of apologies. Unfortunately, Channel 4 would not commit to speeding up the process. While that is disappointing, at least they can be in no doubt that the lack of AD and, of course, subtitles, is a serious issue. If they have not restored this service by mid-November, I'll be getting back in touch with my MP, and I'd recommend that other deaf and blind people contact their own MPs. The more pressure we can apply, the less likely Channel 4 are to drag their feet. Hopefully it won't be necessary, but let's wait and see. Loving your show as always, Gordon.
Thank you, Gordon, or Gordon, as it decided to say. Gordon. Don't know, it's like Thomas the Tank sounding kind of way of saying Gordon.
It's weird. Yeah. No, totally agree.
No, yeah, absolutely. That's, you know, this is still ongoing. I mean, it's starting to fix itself. I did see that a number of Channel 4 shows now have audio description and subtitling coming back on All 4, which is the on-demand platform, which is good news. But yeah, it's got to be restored. And if it's going to take until mid-November, that is ridiculous. But they are saying they're rebuilding the whole thing from scratch. So hence the time it's taking. Hopefully, they're hoping they will get it done sooner than that. Fingers crossed. So yeah, we'll keep you updated as the show continues. Of course, I mentioned that RNIB helpline number. I want to mention it one more time for people who need access to that helpline. There's lots of resources available through RNIB. This number is the gateway to all of them. It's 0303 123 9999. That's 0303 123 9999. That is it for our show this week. You can keep emailing us, techtalk@rnib.org.uk, and our lovely voices, Brian and Amy. Round of applause for Brian and Amy. Our robots, they will do the wonderful job of reading them out, and we will of course be back again same time next week. Keep your comments coming. I'm sure you'll have plenty following this week's show. Robin, Tim, thank you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.